Welcome to Biz News here on the Business Report. I'm Gary Struwell, and I get the opportunity to chat to the finance ghost about what's going on in the local markets and sometimes looking at what's going on internationally as well. So, ghost, welcome back to the show. Let's start out with MTN. And it is interesting as we watch the various countries come out with their reportings. It looks like MTN Rwanda had a good time of it. But also Ghana and Nigeria, strong numbers. But it has been very up and down. And what is this? I suppose let's just stop at MTN for a second. As a multinational operating in so many African countries, we often hear of major corporates having an Africa strategy. Having watched MTN for a number of years now, what do you think this tells us about what companies should be considering from an African strategy? And from an investment perspective, what does it tell us as investors for companies that are embarking on African strategies?
Hi, Gary, and all the listeners. Yes, the MTN stories coming out of Africa are certainly much better than we've seen for quite some time. I think all eyes were on Nigeria just because that's the biggest and most important of the subsidiaries. And it's also the one that has dished out by far the most pain. And the story there is looking just a whole lot better in general. So it's important, rather than I think the specifics of the numbers, to understand just why these businesses have struggled. And it mainly relates to macroeconomics. So you end up with issues like rapidly depreciating currencies, and then MTN is sitting with a whole lot of letters of credit on their supply chain, sitting in USD, for example. You know, they have to import a lot of stuff to roll out their infrastructure. And so a rapidly depreciating currency ends up being a huge problem for them, even before they actually say, okay, well, we're now taking these earnings from, you know, Nigeria to South Africa. It's not even the Naira into the Rand that is the biggest problem. It's the Naira against the dollar, for example. And that's just one of the things that has been going wrong. Then you have situations like African governments doing what they do best, which is going and making sudden changes to taxes or levies or regulations. And this can cause a whole bunch of issues, unfortunately. Sometimes it happens in the more traditional business. Sometimes it happens on the fintech side. Either way, it's quite a minefield for MTN to always have to manage. I think what's very encouraging in this latest quarter is that if you look across Nigeria, Ghana, and now Rwanda, they are all growing ahead of inflation. Now, that's a big deal in Africa because, you know, I can quote a growth rate to you of, oh, revenue was up 20%. But if inflation was 22%, then suddenly that 20% doesn't sound so good, does it? It's actually negative real growth. So when you're looking at these companies, it's very important to not just look at the numbers in isolation, but to look at them in the context of the inflation rate and to then look at what has happened to the EBITDA margin. Has it gone the right way? Has it gone the wrong way? Yes, we've seen a bit of pressure, for example, in the margin in the Rwandan business. But on the whole, all three subsidiaries have been growing their earnings and their revenue ahead of inflation in those specific countries. And that is a huge improvement from what we've seen over much of last year for MTN. The market already knows this, which is why the MTN share price has had a really strong year. The telecom sector has actually been a great place to be this year for once, which is extremely rare because usually it's quite tough. And over the long term, it's been quite tough. But, you know, every dog has its day. And at the moment, these African economies seem to be having their day. And that is good news for MTN and MTN investors. And just to answer the question about how should we view this in the context of other South African corporates or Namibian ones for that matter with businesses in Africa, I think if you look at the risks of why MTN suffered so much, you can kind of understand why other companies have also had a tough time. So, for example, when the macroeconomics go against you or governmental regulations, obviously there's always the risk of conflict in many of these countries. I mean, Gemfields has had to deal with that in Mozambique recently. So I think the point is you've got to be in a space where you have a potentially high growth business because they are going to be bad years, definitely. But if there's enough of a growth opportunity, if you're tapping into the core trends that make Africa interesting, so stuff like population growth, connectivity, levels of financial inclusion, which would be in something like MTN's fintech business when they're offering value-added services, then when things do go well, they will actually go really well for you. And hopefully then that means that we'll see an improvement in fortunes for some of these companies because, yes, Africa has claimed many scalps. Nigeria itself has claimed quite a number of South African corporate scalps. It's a tough place to do business.
Okay, let's turn again to Renogen. That story, the share we've been following for quite a while now, they were wrapped up in courts on a very complicated issue, but it does look like there's a ruling. Perhaps you can just simplify that for guys who are following the Renogen story.
Yeah, so it's quite interesting is that Renogen released their financials for the year ended February the other day, actually. And I went and specifically read the litigation section because honestly, there are so many different court proceedings that it's kind of difficult to actually keep track with what is going on. And I'm going to just caveat this by saying I'm certainly not a lawyer. In fact, I'm specifically not a lawyer. I'm actually a CA by profession. So I can't tell you for sure, you know, whether or not a particular legal proceeding has certainly come to an end or whether or not there's a risk of appeal, et cetera, et cetera. But what we do know is that Renogen did score a bit of a bloody nose against Springbok Solar. That news broke a few weeks ago, you may recall. My understanding is that the court in that regard is still reserving judgment on the specific issues between the parties. But it looks like Renogen went sort of behind the back and scored a bit of a win by getting Springbok Solar into trouble with its regulator. So, you know, that's just basically a negotiating tactic. And Renogen does make it clear in their report that they are still willing to look at some kind of coexistence agreement that actually works for both parties. So hopefully at some point that will all just settle and the problem will go away. I guess time will tell. Now, the latest news around Renogen is that the High Court in Gauteng has finally taken away some of the ambiguity around the regulatory regime that actually applies to Renogen. And specifically, they ruled that Renogen's activities, provided they stay away from any kind of piped gas supply, will fall under the MPRDA, that's the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, and therefore sits outside of the regulatory reach of NERSA. So this is quite important because previously there was some confusion around exactly who should be regulating Renogen. So I guess this is just sort of one more risk off the table, probably one of the smaller ones, if I'm honest, but it has been a good few weeks for Renogen in terms of news flow.
Right, let's take a look at a totally different kind of company, and that's Brait. Now, Brait, most famously perhaps, Virgin Active, the money behind Virgin Active. Their share price is up 65% over the last 12 months. Anyone who took a punt on them last year would have been quite happy with the performance of that. Perhaps just give us a view on where you see Brait, given a almost unique position that it has in terms of how it manages its investments.
Yeah, Brait's is super interesting. I mean, Virgin Active is the classic boot business, if you'll let me make the joke, although obviously there are lots and lots and lots of different people who use Virgin Active. It's not just the big guys in the corner pumping iron. But what has definitely been getting pumped higher is the share price. As you say, it has done really well in the past year. Again, every dog has its day, right? That's how the markets work. And a lot of this is just because Virgin Active does finally seem to be making some kind of recovery after COVID. And COVID was a disaster for the gyms for obvious reasons. And they needed to go and raise some capital as a result on the balance sheet. And really, really tough times for Brait. But they're now starting to emerge in a place where Virgin Active is growing its revenue. And the beauty of the Virgin Active model, it's a little bit like airline economics in that, you know, you sell those last few seats on the plane and that profit just drops to the bottom line because it costs you nothing extra really to have a few more people sitting on the plane, but you get all that revenue. Likewise, in a gym, you've got quite high fixed costs, so high operating leverage. If you can just get your membership numbers up over and above that level, then it really does do wonders for your overall profitability. So what we're seeing at the moment at Virgin Active is that it looks like they're growing their revenue sort of 13% year on year. So that's a solid rate. And if you look at their March numbers and then you annualize their profit, the annualized run rate of EBITDA is £119 million. That is way up from £85 million as at September 2024. Now, annualized EBITDA is obviously a bit of a, I don't call it a silly statistic. It's not. It's relevant. It's saying, well, if we made this every month for 12 months, what would we make? It's a good way to track how the business is doing, and they are clearly doing a lot better. Remember, they also have a stake in Premier, but Premier is now separately listed. That FMCG group is doing very nicely, expecting HEPS growth of between 20% and 30% for the year end of March. So that's doing wonders. And then at New Look, which is their historically messy business in the UK, there was a recent capital raise by New Look and Brait declined to participate, which I think the market liked because a lot of good money gets thrown after bad in the space. And rates is kind of sticking to their knitting of saying, hey, you know, we are a lot more disciplined these days with our capital allocation. That's what the market wants to see.
And let's take a look at CMH. There's been quite a lot of information out over the last few days at Consolidated Motor Holdings. And I mean, it tells an interesting story, not only about CMH and perhaps one or two strategic missteps that at this stage appear to be missteps, but also just how quickly markets can change. Now, here in Namibia, we have really yet to see the Chinese onslaught. The brands are visible, but there's still a lot of resistance in the market to what one would call foreign brands, the Japanese brands and German brands still being amongst the favored purchases, and Toyota still with almost a 50% market share in Namibia. But what we've seen in South Africa is quite a dramatic shakeup over the last few years, and that story is well told through CMH. So perhaps just give us a quick overview of what is happening there at CMH and what it tells us about how markets can change.
So what I can tell you is if you drive around in South Africa at the moment, throw a stone and you will hit a Chinese car. They are everywhere. And quite frankly, they are everywhere with really good reason. They just have a compelling product range. That's the reality. I was actually lucky enough to attend Le Mans last year in France, the 24-hour race, which was a huge bucket list item for me. And I think what was so interesting was in the kind of fan village, you've obviously got, you know, stands that have been taken by the relevant car manufacturers. And it's the usual suspects you would certainly expect to see there. It's Porsche, it's Ferrari, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there was also a Chinese manufacturer. I think it was BYD. And it just, for me, was such a show of intent. It's the Chinese saying, we are not actually just some cheap, rubbishy alternative. We are here to compete. We are here to build a brand. Sure, they went on track. How long will it be until that happens? Well, you know, it will probably happen. Why on earth not? Right now, Hyundai races in the World Rally Championship, as far as I know, last time I looked. And so these brands do use motorsport. They do use other means to actually just try and win some brand equity versus the established names, the European brands, some of the American brands, certainly the Japanese brands that everyone is familiar with. But the Chinese brands, even without that stuff, are doing so well because their cars are just so well priced for what you get. You know, 300, 400,000 Rand later, you drive out in a brand new family SUV. It's a quality car. I've spoken to people who own Haval dealerships and they say, I mean, sure, it's, you know, a little bit of bias maybe, but they tell me that the quality is really good. You know, they have very few comebacks, etc. And that's very encouraging. So CMH has got this big footprint of, unfortunately, legacy brands. They do have some winners, obviously. Suzuki has been a fantastic one for them. That's their top seller. Suzuki itself has been a great story in South Africa, and maybe just another example of how market share can change. Coming with the right product, coming with the right marketing strategy and the right dealer footprint, and you can cause a big shock to some of the European names. And I think in the same way that Suzuki did that, the Chinese are starting to do it. And unfortunately for CMH, they are way overrepresented now in legacy brands and underrepresented in some of the Chinese brands. And it will be interesting to see how that develops over time. I don't think this trend is going to change. I've got to tell you, if I look at the model range of some of the established German names, I mean, we saw news about Audi bleating to the South African government for help. You know, maybe if Audi's cars weren't so incredibly overpriced, they would be able to actually sell some more of them. So well done to the Chinese. They've spotted a gap. They've understood what the average car buyer is really looking for. And for the likes of CMH, they're going to have to, really think about their dealer footprint and how they reposition it for this trend. I remain Lon We Buy Cars in this space. That's my chosen fighter because they are brand agnostic. At the end of the day, all they care about is churning cars among the car buying population. And there was a great stat in the CMH numbers that there are about 10 million South Africans who have cars. And this number has hardly grown over time. So the impact of the Chinese coming in is that you've got more and more and more brands fighting for a market that doesn't grow. So basically every car that's sold that is a Chinese car would have been, say, a European car or a Japanese car. And that's very dangerous for the likes of CMH. But for We Buy Cars, where I'm invested, it's fine. I don't really care what kind of car We Buy Cars sells from person A to person B. As long as they make their margin, I'm a happy shareholder.
All right, guys, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. You can wander off back into the halls and float through the walls and see what's going on in the halls of power. We'll be back next week here on GhostBiz on the Business Report. I'm Gary Strubel. Thank you for listening. And remember, you can pick up this episode and all our previous episodes and segments wherever you pick up your podcasts, on Apple, Android, Spotify, or on nova.com.na. Look forward to chatting to you next week.